Did you know nearly one-third of supplement consumers in the U.S. are unsatisfied with the current immune-supporting drinks on the market? Help your consumers get the products they want with Immuse, the novel, clinically researched postbiotic that activates our body's natural defenses at the cellular level for year-round immune support. Formulate with the immune health ingredients backed by 30-plus research studies. Learn more at immusehealth.com. That's Immuse, I-M-M-U-S-E, health.com.
Hello, and thanks for tuning into episode 88 of Taste Radio Insider. I'm Ray Lateef, the editor and producer of Taste Radio, and I'm with my BevNet and Nosh colleagues, Mike Schneider, Melissa Traverse, and Brad Avery. In this episode, we're joined by Ashley Rogers, the founder of innovative puff brand Spudzy, who discusses lessons learned from her initial foray into CPG and how she's applied them to her current business. Just a reminder, if you like what you hear on Taste Radio, please share the podcast with friends and colleagues, and of course, would love it if you could review us on the Apple Podcasts app or your listening platform of choice.
Ray, did you get to crunch on any of that new vegan ranch Spudzy while you were doing the interview?
I didn't, but Ashley said she'd send us some of that product to the office. I mean, it sounds like sweet potatoes and ranch dressing are a winning combination.
I can't wait to try that one. Hopefully she'll send the sour cream and onion as well. She keeps teasing us on Instagram.
I think ranch and anything is a winning combination myself.
All right. Agreed. Well, I can't wait to try her new chocolate ranch.
Okay, you got me.
I would have chocolate ranch.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you.
Brad, how are you? I haven't talked to you in a bit.
I know. I'm good. Yeah, it's great to be on. You know, been a little too long since I've been on the show, but things have been doing all right over here.
Brad, you've been busy. Have you even had time to be on the show?
Yeah, I have been pretty busy. I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, news just kind of coming out of the industry. I think maybe even more than I initially expected at this time, which I thought would be down. But really, everything is, you know, shifting so rapidly that it's been hard to keep up with sometimes.
While Brad is on this podcast, he's simultaneously taking calls and writing an article. So you should be fine.
Well, this month is going to get even busier. We've got a lot going on here at BevNet and Nosh. Next week kicks off our Nosh Pitch Slam 8, sponsored by 301 Inc. and BevNet's New Beverage Showdown 19, sponsored by Venturing and Emerging Brands. Both of the semifinal rounds will be held on June 9th. The Pitch Slam will be running from 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and the Showdown from 3:30 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time as well. The final rounds of both competitions will be held on June 11th. Really amazing to see the breadth and variety of brands that applied, nearly 200 combined between the two competitions. Just amazing.
We are so excited about all of our applicants, and we're really looking forward to the competitions. We had some incredibly talented and innovative brands apply, and it was so hard to narrow each competition down to 12 brands, but we did it, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, the good news is that we had enough applicants for a few different competitions and that there is another application process right around the corner. We'll be announcing that later this year.
Yeah, I saw the list of beverage brands for the showdown, and I really think it's an exciting batch for sure. I think a real good diversity of innovation in hot categories and some new twists on classic categories. Looking at what has been chosen here to compete is a really strong batch, and I'm really excited to see how it plays out.
Me too, Brad. I've got the pen of judgment ready to go.
Yes, Mike will once again reprise his role as a judge for the showdown semifinal round. And, you know, to all the folks who applied, and I know some of you are listening right now, we feel so humbled to be a part of this amazing community of entrepreneurs in food and beverage, and what you're creating is really driving our industry forward. For folks that made it into the competitions, congratulations. For folks who didn't make it this time around, congratulations as well. Because what you're doing is really special. And we had a really hard time whittling it down, as Melissa noted. But we were just so amazed by what came in. And I know that we have a really bright future ahead.
We saw some really interesting trends across the board. Brad just mentioned some of the ones that came up for New Beverage Showdown. Through Nosh, we saw a number of brands doubling down on frozen snacks and appetizers, which is certainly prescient as we think about how those sales have climbed in the last few months. And certainly global palate is a big thing, Middle Eastern flavors, a number of brands who use sesame and tahini. It's going to be great.
Hey, did we mention this one's on us? You can stream the New Beverage Showdown for free on bevnet.com and Pitch Slam for free on nosh.com.
That's a great point, Mike. And I highly recommend that folks do so. A lot of lessons and really interesting insights and points from our judges come out of that competition, come out of both competitions, that is. You'll definitely want to tune in. In addition to those amazing folks that are contributing to our community of entrepreneurs in food and beverage, we're excited to see our entire community coming together for BevNet and Nosh virtually live, which will be held on June 23rd and 24th. A big undertaking to put this together, and it's going to be a really, really exciting event. If you've ever attended a Nosh Live or BevNet Live, you already know the benefits of attending those shows. But our virtual event will include even more opportunities to network, meet investors, meet distributors. It's going to be a really amazing show.
We're also so excited about this. I think in some ways it might be even easier for attendees to find the people that they're looking to speak with and network. There are ways to search for people, request chats, send messages. It's going to be big.
We've also added structured ways to meet up. If you go to bevnet.com or nosh.com and go to the virtually live tab, you can register for the event. And we've added investor speed dating, Ray.
Investor speed dating, Mike? That sounds like something that a lot of folks would be interested in for sure.
We've got a great group of investors. We're going to be adding some more. Currently, any brand who's registered for the event can express interest in investor speed dating. We'll get you signed up and you get 7 minutes with your dream investor.
Well, in addition to all the networking and investor meeting opportunities, we're going to have a ton of content, relevant and timely content that is packed into the event as well. Brad, you're working on some of that content right now, right?
Oh, yeah. We're putting together, you know, breakout rooms that will accompany some main stage presentations that will be streamed. So the breakout rooms are going to be really great, where you can sort of choose your own adventure with the conference, different panels, different roundtables, Q&A, a lot of great opportunities. I'm working on some that I'll be moderating, with some data dives on how consumer behavior has changed during this here pandemic. And I've got some others that are focusing on marketing. I should have a really fun marketing interview that I think you'll really enjoy. So I'm really looking forward to this. I think we put together a great set of content for this first go at a virtual event.
And we're going to be opening the doors the day before the event so that you can get to know the sponsors. The sponsors will have resources and on-demand content for you to consume ahead of the event. It's going to be really cool.
Totally. And I like the way you talked about it being sort of a choose-your-own-adventure, Brad. I mean, there is going to be a ton of content that will be available to all registered attendees. Even if you can't make it live, we'll have it for you after the show. So don't think that if you attend one breakout session, you'll miss another one. But there's a lot of opportunity to network within those breakout rooms as they're happening. So as Mike mentioned, we'll be opening the doors prior to the event for folks to get familiar with the site and with the content. Once again, the event is being held on June 23rd and 24th. Subscribers of BevNet and Nosh will be able to register at no additional cost. If you haven't subscribed to BevNet or Nosh, now is the time to do so. Go to either site, look for the red button in the upper right-hand corner, hit subscribe, and you'll be good to go.
And unlike Choose Your Own Adventure, where I don't know about you, but I always died after the first two pages, we're going to have a lot of different ways to navigate you through the event. We're going to make sure that you have enough time to, you know, figure out how the event works and get to the sessions that you want to be able to attend. And it's going to be exciting and fun and definitely an adventure. Adventure is the right word, Brad. Nice choice of words.
I promise if you come to my breakout sessions, you will not encounter a spiked pit or a snake in the corner of the main. That will not happen. I guarantee it.
Important things to know before attending BevNet and Nosh virtually live. Mike, I heard you're starting a beverage company.
Ray, let's say I was. Do you have any suggestions for a complete partner?
Absolutely. Ingredion. Ingredion is a leading global plant-based ingredient solutions provider to the food and beverage industry with a diverse portfolio, including sweeteners and sugar reduction technologies, plant-based proteins, starches, and hydrocolloids.
Of course. Ingredients 360 Value Framework delivers value according to your brand's specific needs through consumer well-being, environmental impact, and value creation. Ingredients market research and insights for innovation can help uncover opportunities within the beverage space. For instance, figuring out what added health benefits consumers need. They have a network of technical experts that will help you solve your pain points to get you to market faster. With Ingredient, you gain a partner who helps you deliver the total beverage experience that keeps consumers coming back.
To learn more about Ingredient, head to tasteradio.com/beverage.
The New Beverage Showdown returns to BevNet Live in New York City on June 12th and 13th. Pitch your beverage startup in front of a panel of expert judges, our live audience, and viewers tuning into the live stream. To learn more, visit bevnetlive.com.
Brad, you talked a lot about timely content for attendees of the show. Speaking of which, I really enjoyed your recent article on how some brands in the coffee business are pivoting during the pandemic.
Yeah, you know, that was a really interesting piece to work on. I did that about a couple weeks ago now, where it's pretty clear the on-premise channel has been perhaps the hardest hit during the pandemic, just because by the very nature of it, restaurants have had to close, offices have had to close, and that's an entire channel that's just been shut off. So one category that we've seen crop up over the past several years, especially as workplaces have moved to sort of create these friendly environments for their employees to have on draft coffee and other products. So we've seen the rise of on draft coffee, bag and box coffee that has targeted this channel. And now that's just been shut off. So I spoke to several brands that was their core strategy, or if not their core strategy, a significant part of their business, and how they've adjusted. And they've found really innovative, interesting ways to pivot. And they can keep these pivots going after the channel reopens.
Brad, you pointed out in that article something that we've been hearing a lot in the industry, that consumers aren't spending money on daily trips to get lunch or coffee, transportation, parking, even clothing. And so they certainly may be willing to pay more at home for items like this.
Yeah. And so if you look at the article, you know, some of the decisions that these companies have made. So there's a Joyride, and they are a distributor that also makes their own coffee. And they pushed up by a full year the release of a bag-in-box product. They had always kind of wanted to make this move to the at-home use occasion, and this necessitated that they jump into it. And so what they've done is they've made a premium quality coffee in a bag-in-box that you can purchase online and keep in your fridge. And it's a way to carry over also the consumers that had been used to Joyride on draft when they went to work, and now this is a way to maintain that consumer base at home and give them the same product and reach them directly rather than through their employers. But I'll add that they're also working with employers who are looking to provide the coffee for their employees to take care of their staff while they're at work from home.
Can we also talk about that brand you mentioned called Snowing in Space, who's doing a bean business, launching a whole bean business, and they have those creature packages where the coffee bag turns into a puppet for parents who have kids to play with. It made me miss prizes in cereal boxes.
Snowing in Space is wonderful, and that was a kind of cute little surprise that came up when I was talking with them. You know, they wanted to make the move into whole bean as a way to diversify the business and, you know, have another line that they can sell. And I just thought when he mentioned that they were going to make these fun packages, that it was just, it's a smaller part of the brand, but it's also something that just, you know, feels so ingenious and catches your eye when it's on shelf. Their packaging pops. So what they've done is they've put these little monster or creature faces on the back of their packaging. And so when you're done with the package, you can turn it into a hand puppet that you can give to your kids or entertain your kids with if you're work from home and you have small children who, you know, often require constant attention.
I hope those are child safe, because I was the kid who used to swallow the prizes.
You couldn't fit one of the bags on a head, so that's a good thing.
That's a good thing, yeah.
I would make sure that the coffee bean residue is thoroughly cleaned off if you don't want your kids just caffeinated to all hell.
I also, when I was a kid, once shoved Trix up my nose too far and had to go to the doctor.
You were one of those kids.
Yeah, definitely. Experiment. I've always been innovative, Brad.
And what'd you learn from that experience?
Don't shove Trix up your nose, of course. And don't swallow the prizes in the cereal box. You know, those are pretty... Also, don't eat the rhododendrons. That was another thing I did.
Uh-huh. Oh,
just
Mike.
The lessons that come out of Taste Radio are just remarkable.
If you take any lesson away from this episode, let that be it.
Don't do what Mike did as a child.
Rhododendrons are poisonous. That was uncomfortable. My uncle had... He ate roses, and my mom told me that, you know, hey, your Uncle Joe, he ate roses. And so I was like, oh, we'll go eat flowers too. Be like Uncle Joe. Yeah, that was a bad idea. Thanks, Uncle Joe.
Yeah.
I really want to read a book about your childhood, Mike. I think it would be a bestseller for sure.
I'll work on that, right?
Eating grass with Mike Schneider.
All right. I think it's time to get to our featured interview for this episode. That's with Ashley Rogers, the founder and CEO of Spudzy, a fast-growing brand of sweet potato-based snacks. A serial entrepreneur, Ashley cut her teeth in the food business as the founder of an ahead-of-its-time meal kit company and is also the co-founder of protein-centric food brand Buff Bake. In the following interview, Ashley discusses how she applied lessons from her first two businesses to the development of Spudzy and spoke about the critical importance of velocity, thoughtful distribution, co-packer relationships, and reliable business partners. Hey folks, it's Ray with Taste Radio. I'm going to call right now with Ashley Rogers, the founder, CEO, and head spud of Spudzy. Ashley, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Where'd head spud come from?
I just thought it was like a cute, creative little title. I don't know. Sometimes I feel weird like saying CEO or founder, like it's too legit for me. So I just like head spud. It makes it more fun.
It's too legit. I like that. Geez, the last time I heard that phrase, too legit, that was a long time ago, but now I'm dating myself when I reference MC Hammer. He's not even MC Hammer anymore. He's just Hammer, right?
Sure, is it?
Yeah, she's like, I have no idea what you're talking
no
about.
No idea.
Let's just leave it at that. Okay. You know, you're an entrepreneur twice over, actually more than that. You're an entrepreneur three, maybe four times over.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when we talked, you grew up around this. You were raised in an entrepreneurial household.
Yep.
Tell us about your exposure to running your own business.
Yeah. So I was raised by my dad, who is an entrepreneur. He's from New York and moved to Las Vegas. I was born and raised in Las Vegas. He moved to New York with like $500 in his pocket and built a little Vegas empire. He owned a chain of like 70 bars in Las Vegas called PT's Pub. And so I basically just grew up watching him start this business. And now he does a ton of other things. He didn't go to college. He barely graduated high school, but he just always had this drive instilled within him. And I feel like I kind of got it from him.
You mentioned you grew up in Las Vegas. That's when you started your first business. You know, how did you get into this space? You know, what really keyed your foray into entrepreneurship?
Yeah. So my first job was at the Hard Rock Casino. I was a cocktail waitress out by the pool. So I worked with girls in a bathing suit serving drinks. And a lot of these girls ate really healthy. I realized then that I never want to work for anybody else. I'm like, I had to do my own thing. So my first company that I started was a meal prep company called LV Lean Box. And this was like before meal prep was cool. This was literally like 10 years ago. I've always been into health and fitness and eating healthy. And I started prepping meals for these girls. And within like a month, I had over 50 girls that I was making meals for. And eventually I was making meals for this tech guy. He owned like a software company, and he had just sold his software company and wanted to do something fun. And he ended up buying LV Lean Box off of me. So that was kind of like my first little entrepreneurial experience.
And how long was it between when you started the company to when you sold it?
I did LV Lean Box for about, it was quick, like 9 months. Month one, I had 50 people that I was making meals for. I was renting kitchen space out of somebody's kitchen. And by month nine, I had like over 250 people that I was making meals for.
Well, if you can build and sell a company in 9 months, you're doing something right. I wonder how much that had to do with the launch of your next business, which is Buff Bake. Talk a bit about what Buff Bake is and how you identified the opportunity to innovate in the category in which that brand plays.
So I wanted to stay in the same space because, I mean, LV Lean Box was kind of like my entry into the food space. And I saw that no one was really making protein products. Like our first Buff Bake product was a protein muffin called a Buffin. And no one was really doing this product. So that was the first product we started to create. We realized that the shelf life on it was extremely short. It had a 2-week shelf life. And we were shipping muffins across the country. They were moldy. So that's kind of what brought us to these nut butters. We had saw another brand, Nuts and More, doing these nut butters on Shark Tank. And I thought it was a great idea. And that's kind of how the whole nut butter Buff Bake started.
Obviously, you know, we see a lot of protein enhanced nut butters these days. What made you think at the time of Buff Bake's launch that there was a consumer out there for this brand and for this type of product?
Yeah, I knew the protein nut butters made sense because so Nuts and More was doing them, but they were mainly on the East Coast and we were in California. I moved from Vegas to California with my cousin Brittany, and no one was really, they weren't being distributed anywhere on the West Coast. And so that's kind of why we saw a need for it. I saw it like how much they were scaling their business through social media and through getting into distribution on the East Coast that I knew we needed it on the West Coast. So that's why we started to do these protein nut butters. We just started selling them on social media. This is like before Instagram blew up. Like you would post something on Instagram with an influencer and you would get thousands of dollars in sales, like Instagram 5 years ago. And we started selling them in farmers markets across Orange County.
You mentioned another brand that was on the market already, which is Nuts and More. The interesting thing about a regional focus for you guys is that it wasn't very regional for very long. You know, when we talked prior to this interview, you talked about the surprising amount of success that you had early into the business's life cycle. Why was it so surprising and why were you so surprised at how rapidly it was growing?
I think I was so surprised because on our end, we felt like we didn't really know what we were doing. Like we would rented kitchen space. We were doing everything ourselves. We were making nut butters in a tiny kitchen in Costa Mesa, doing all of the packaging and everything ourselves and just selling them through small outlets. But because we gained so much visibility on Instagram so quickly, national chain Vitamin Shoppe found us through Instagram. And we ended up going from self-manufacturing in a tiny kitchen to buying equipment and renting our own building and manufacturing there to moving to a co-packer. So everything just happened so quick and we kind of had to learn along the way. But yeah, it was surprising. Like from the time we launched Buff Bake to the time we were in Vitamin Shoppe, that was all in year one. So things happened really quick for us.
Was quick a good thing or looking back, would you have preferred to slow down?
We definitely should have moved slower. I know we talked about some of my mistakes and that was one of my big mistakes and one of my big learning lessons that I'm so grateful for. Was we grew way too fast. So it went from being in Vitamin Shoppe nationwide to being in GNC nationwide to being in really everywhere. The protein nut butter turned into a protein cookie because we wanted our name Buff Bake to make sense again. So we ended up creating this protein cookie and we basically went into nationwide distribution and really everywhere you can think of. Safeway, 24 Hour Fitness, Sprouts, now they're in regions of Whole Foods so quickly that we didn't really have the opportunity to dive deep in any of these stores. And it's funny because before I was like, oh, it's so hard to get into a store. Like that's the hard part, but that's the easy part is getting your product on the shelf. the hard part is educating a consumer to get them to pull your product off the shelf. And that's probably my number one learning lesson within Buff Bake. So I definitely would have taken it slower, but that's what I'm doing with Spudsy.
Well, you live and you learn, right?
You live and you learn.
Well, one of the other things that you mentioned and we discussed was the name, and you brought that up. You know, Buff Bake had to play in spaces where the name of the brand made sense. And, you know, to me, when I think about the word buff, I think about, you know, people work out, protein, you know, fitness-oriented consumers. And that can lend itself to a more narrow and niche focus.
I think Buff Bake is like such a cute and catchy name, but I do feel like Buff Bake fit. When we first created Buff Bake, we created it with fitness people in mind, fitness influencers, fitness retailers. Like, so I do think it could be a little bit polarizing to like a natural consumer. So if I were to know what I knew now, I probably would have named it something different.
Another thing you might have done different is find a more reliable co-packer. Now, this is something that comes up often. I always get questions from folks in our audience about how to find a good co-packer, how to establish a good relationship with your co-packer, what to do when things go wrong. You know, you've run the gamut in terms of working with co-packers. You really stepped in it, so to speak, with your production partner for Buff Bake. Can you talk a little bit about what went wrong and why things didn't work out the way they should have?
Yeah. So finding the right co-packer is like next to impossible. Like, it's so hard to find a good manufacturer, I feel like, that cares about your product and your baby in the way that you do. I feel like a lot of these co-packers, they just want the business. They want to pump out products, and the consistency that they have lacks. With Buff Bake, we definitely experienced several challenges. One, the last co-packer we had before I left the company, they produced like $200 million brands, massive brands, protein bars. And obviously these $100 million brands that are running around the clock are their priority. So we've been put in situations where we were unable to receive product for months at a time because we weren't that co-packer's priority, which sucked for us because we were getting POs and orders and we had no product to ship because we were unable to produce. So just situations like that and like consistency issues were always a really big challenge. Definitely picking the right co-packer and finding a solid co-packer manufacturer relationship, I would say, is mistake number two that I learned on that journey. And to me, that's like something that you have to find.
I have to think that the contract really matters, doesn't it? I mean, when you think about a problem between two parties, it's the contract that binds them. So if something went wrong, couldn't you litigate?
Yeah, I'm sure you could, but one, no brand wants to go into litigation because they're broke anyways. At least we did not have money to litigate. There are contracts in place, but there's like stipulations. So a contract could say like, okay, if we don't produce your order two times in a row, you have the ability to go to another manufacturer or something like that. If we don't produce your order within 30 days, you have the ability to go to a different manufacturer. But what people don't realize is like, we don't want to go to another manufacturer because you can't just pick up your freaking ingredients and walk to another manufacturer and have them make your product. Like, you have to do pilot runs. You have to find the manufacturer. You have to, every manufacturer is different. Their equipment's different and your product may need to be slightly tweaked and R&D'd for it to work on a different manufacturer's equipment. So that process could take 3 to 6 months to pick up your stuff and go to a manufacturer. So, and co-packers know that. So I feel like most of the time you're at their mercy. And I mean, it kind of just is what it is, unless you want to pick up and move to a manufacturer and it take 3 to 6 months or however long to get that new manufacturer to learn how to make your product. So it's just not that easy, but yeah, there are contracts in place.
Sometimes partners have contracts between them, as in co-founders or those who have invested in your brand. But as we've noted, with co-packers, contracts aren't always the be-all, end-all to keeping a relationship in line.
Yeah, there were several partners in Buff Bake. I started Buff Bake with my cousin, and then we brought in two other people. And then by the time I left, there was five of us. So I feel like with Buff Bake, there just was too many cooks in the kitchen, maybe. And I mean, that can get hard when you have so many different partners, family, friends, like all in a company together. That was kind of the situation there. To me, like, this is my third lesson, actually. Picking your team and picking the people you surround yourself with and just having that culture within your company literally will make or break your company. Like, to me, culture and your team is everything. And you just need to find people that are on the same level as you, that work well with you, and you work well with them. So this was a big learning lesson for me. I think there were just too many cooks in the kitchen, and ultimately, like, I wanted to do my own thing. And I feel like I started Buff Bake with just me and my cousin Brittany, and it just turned into so many people being involved that I just wanted to go back to it just being me or a limited amount of people. But team culture, freaking crucial.
You hear that, folks? It's not just crucial, it's freaking crucial.
Freaking crucial.
Yeah. Mike, I was just in the kitchen and I saw this really cool THC-infused beverage brand called Eighth Wonder.
Ah, chill brand. They make cannabis bevs as well as beer and spirits. The product you're talking about is a super tasty cherry limeade cannabis seltzer called Lil Bit. And did you know Eighth Wonder was acquired last year by Houston's BioCity Hemp?
Yes, I did. That deal created a world-class, vertically integrated cannabis and craft beverage company. Bio's science-based processes for extracting THC from hemp have made the company the gold standard for cannabis products across Texas and beyond.
Bio's cannabis portfolio includes Eighth Wonder as well as Howdy and Beach Break, all of which are distributed throughout Texas and Louisiana.
You can learn more about all these brands at eighthwonder.com, siphowdy.com, and sipbeachbreak.com.
On June 12th and 13th in New York City, hear from Icelandic Glacial, Lemon Perfect, GoPuff, Sachet, Diageo Ventures, and Lowe's Foods during the leading event for the beverage industry. Save on BevNet Live tickets through April 26th. Just visit bevnetlive.com.
Let's talk about Spud Z. I'm curious, you talked about three very specific stumbling points that became lessons. But before they became lessons, I'm sure you were just like, man, this is a tough, tough business. You know, why do you get back into CPG knowing how difficult it is?
It is difficult, but it's like, it's what I know. It's like what the last 6 years of my career was CPG. And honestly, it's what I'm obsessed with. I shop at Whole Foods and Sprouts. Those are like the two main stores that I go to, but I'm obsessed with Whole Foods. Like, I could spend 2 hours in Whole Foods just looking at people's brands, product and branding and ingredients. Like, I just love it. And like, I feel like this is the world that I want to be in. And yeah, it's hard, but I mean, I'm really good at figuring things out. And when I set my mind to something, like, I figure out a way to get it done. So I knew this is where I wanted to be. And I knew I wanted my next brand to be in food.
Specifically in sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
Spud Z, a brand of sweet potato puffs. You know, you entered the space just as we're starting to see a lot more innovation in the puff snack category, we'll call it, puff snack segment. You know, what made you think that you could create an innovative product with a single ingredient? Because a lot of what we had been seeing was with chickpeas or pea-based protein or things like that.
Yeah, I just became obsessed with this sweet potato idea. I mean, when I was in Buff Bake, towards the end of Buff Bake is really when I just became obsessed with it. I saw other brands launching that revolved around chickpeas and cauliflower and other vegetables, like you said, and I don't want to eat those things, but I want to eat a sweet potato. Like, you go to any restaurant in America, they sell sweet potato fries. I feel like the consumer gets what a sweet potato is. And honestly, I was just shocked to find out that there one wasn't a platform brand that revolved around the sweet potato, and there wasn't a sweet potato puff. And so that's kind of why I wanted to hop on the sweet potato train.
I often ask this question. I mean, did you have to become an expert in your key ingredient to best market and sell your end product?
I mean, I would say you definitely need to know your key ingredient. I would say that I am a sweet potato expert now. If your whole brand revolves around that, I would probably say yes.
You mentioned that you took an independent approach to launching Spudzy, as in you wanted to run the business without partners, at least at first. Was that true also for fundraising? Was it something where you were very cautious about accepting money, and from whom?
With Spudzy, I had a really unique situation. I think when I started Spudzy, starting a brand cost a ton of money. Like, it just does. Like, I want to build a household name. Like, I want to build something big and massive. And that's another reason why I left Buff Bake to go to Spudzy, because I just did not see Buff Bake being my household name. So when I left to go to Spudzy, I had a little bit of my own money that I used to start Spudzy. I launched a Kickstarter campaign where I raised like $15,000 in 30 days. And the manufacturer that I found to make my sweet potato puffs invested over multiple six figures into Spudzy to get it off the ground, because they believed in me and my idea so much that they wanted to be a part of it. So my situation was very unique, where really I went from idea to having a partnership with this manufacturer who was going to basically help me fund getting this idea off the ground, like before I even had a sweet potato puff.
This is a very rare, unheard of situation.
It is.
And I wonder, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of folks listening who are like, well, how'd she do it? You know, was it the brand? Did you have product ready? I mean, what was it that actually ended up selling the brand to this co-packer?
Yeah. I mean, I asked myself that question, but ultimately they, a couple years ago, partnered with another salty snack brand who's now like, they do 80 million plus in revenue a year. They're a massive salty snack brand. They partnered with them at a very, very young age, and it was the first investment that my co-packer made was in this other salty snack brand. They had massive success with this brand. And when I approached them with my Spudzy idea, I literally sent them an email, I think on a Thursday. And the next week I was sitting in their offices, signed an NDA, had a phone call, told them my idea, told them my background. And a week later I was sitting in their offices working on formulating a deal with them. And they told me that they wanted Spudzy to be the second brand that they do this with, because they believe Spudzy has just as much or more potential than the previous brand that they did this with. And we hit it off. I mean, my co-packer tells me, he's like, the second I met you, I knew you would run through a brick wall to get it done. And between like him seeing my drive and him knowing my past and the success that they've had with this other brand and them believing Spudzy can do the same thing that this other brand did from them, like the combination just, it worked for them. And they believed in my idea and they believed in me, and we partnered together.
How did you navigate the terms of that relationship, the contract with that co-packer, in such a way that you wouldn't be losing control of your company and wouldn't be giving up too much equity?
Yeah. So the partnership is actually, they're very minority partners in the company. So I got really lucky. Without me even having a product, they gave me like a very fair valuation. So I only had to give them a little piece of equity. It's so crazy. Like, even when I talk about this and I go through this in my head, how this whole thing worked, like sometimes I don't even believe it. I don't know. I just feel like I was literally meant to create this brand. I'm so obsessed with it that like everything has just it just worked. It just like come together and worked out for Spudsy. It was about a 6-month process getting through this with attorneys, helped me through it, obviously, to formulate this partnership. But over those 6 months, we started developing the product. And as soon as the partnership was finalized, we started making products and started selling products.
So it wasn't an overnight thing. You did do your due diligence.
Oh, yeah.
As did, I'm sure, the co-packer. And I think that's an important point to make here, is that even if the partnership looks great in person or on paper, it still takes time to vet each other.
Yeah, I will tell you right now, one thing that I learned is nothing good happens overnight. I am the most impatient person in the world. Like, I want to run and get things done immediately. Like, give me an answer, give me an answer. But nothing happens overnight. So that's one of the things that I've like improved within myself, is my patience level over the last 6 years. But yeah, it definitely didn't happen overnight. It takes a long time to get those deals done, but ultimately it ended up working out.
Nothing happens overnight, but as you mentioned, and as we saw with BuffBake, things can happen pretty quickly. Spudsy did carve out a pretty significant retail footprint early on. The brand is about to go national in Whole Foods in September. You know you're supposed to pull back on the reins. You know you want to pull back on the reins, but when the brand has such a following and such interest from buyers to put it on shelf, you know, what's your strategy? What's your process for taking a patient approach to expansion and growth?
You literally just have to say no. We're saying no, or not no, but not right now. And it's so scary. Like, it scares the shit out of me to tell retailers no, because you're like, what if they don't come back? Or that's a $100,000 PO. Like, there's so many things that run through your head, but you want to dive deep in the retailers that you think you can build your brand in. And that's kind of my strategy for Spudsy.
Well, how do you know which retailers those are? You know, what's your process for identifying retailers where you believe the brand can be successful?
I believe our consumer is a Whole Foods shopper. So first you need to identify who your consumer is and where does your consumer shop. And those are the retailers that you should target.
It's hard to be everywhere when your team is pretty small. And what was funny is that you told me for a long time it was just you, and then a director of operations was your first hire. Why have you decided to keep your team so small and tight?
Yeah, it was just me. I mean, we started selling product March 2019. Before that, I was in Spudsy for about a year. So it basically was me for the first year and a half. And I made my first actual real hire November of 2019. I don't think that I've purposely kept it this small for as long as I have. I got to a point where, like, I wanted to max out myself before I started hiring people. But now we're in the process of closing our Series A raise that will hopefully be closed soon. And now is the time where I want to start building out my team.
You must have used outsource support for some of the functions of your brand. What were some of those positions? What were some of those roles that were easiest to outsource? And what were some of the most difficult ones?
Yeah. So we do use a ton of outsourced people. I have a social media team that's outsourced. I have several brokers. We use third-party merchandisers. So basically a team of people, they're called base makers. They're basically our boots on the ground in regions. So they're like my eyes on the floor, and they help us get secondary placement. They help us put dollar off stickers on bags and just make sure our promos are being executed properly. And I think that's it, as third-party people. So I did a smaller raise last year after my co-packer put money into the company. We brought in a group called Stage One Fund. I'm actually in their offices right now. I currently share an office with them. The CFO, Jeremy, is like our interim CFO at Spudsy. So he's been a big help and kind of like an outsourced person too. But again, I got lucky with this relationship also. They've been amazing, and if I wouldn't have raised money from them last year, it would have been another little hurdle.
The branding is something you brought up, and your branding is striking. It definitely feels like it's been polished right out of the gate. How much time did you spend on getting the brand right? How many iterations did you go through before you felt comfortable with moving forward with this as your go-to-market packaging?
We've gone through probably 3 to 4 iterations, so not a ton. Our branding is pretty similar from the time that we launched to now. We just added a little bit more color and color bars. But I don't know. To me, branding's everything. That is one of the things that I feel like I'm best at is branding. And it's something that I'm very passionate about. Like, I like clean, crisp branding. Like, when I go to Target, I buy stuff because of the branding. And it's just so important to me to have, because I feel like that's why one of the ways people pull your product off the shelf. I feel like having those words, sweet potato puffs, really big on the front of the bag was something that was really important to me. So it's like a no-brainer for the consumer to understand and get and pick up and buy.
What are the elements that create that no-brainer response?
So, I mean, look at RX Bar. RX Bar, I feel like, did an amazing job with their branding because they're telling the consumer exactly what the product is.
Sweet potato puffs are certainly the biggest part of the package. I'd say it's, you know, that phrase takes up, I don't know,
70%?
70% of the package, whereas, you know, the logo is a bit smaller. It's big, but it's just not as big as sweet potato puffs. You know, you have plant-based on there at the bottom of the package. But what's interesting is the bag says what it says on the front. And then if you go to your website, a lot of the communication is about upcycling and saving imperfect spuds.
Yep. I'm glad you brought this up.
So why is that a big focus of your website and not so much the front of your package?
So it's a big focus on the back of our package. I feel like you can't be everything. And I mean, people are like, why aren't you organic? Why aren't you this? Like, people are always going to like ask questions. Why? Like, I try to fit as much on the front of the packaging to have that those words sweet potato puffs as big as they are. But the back of the bag is all about save the spud. And that's something that's so important to us. Like in 2019, we saved 100,000 ugly sweet potatoes. And in 2020, we will save over 1 million ugly sweet potatoes. So this was like a huge reason why I'm so obsessed with this concept also is because of our upcycling mission that's tied into the brand.
Ashley, it's been so great talking to you. You know, I first saw your product come into our office about a year ago, and people who came into the kitchen and saw your packaging just ripped it open and started munching on these things. And
I love hearing that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You do have striking branding. You do have a great product. And that's clearly not just me talking about it. When you do convince your co-packer to invest, when you do get into Whole Foods nationally, you must be doing something right. So congratulations on everything you're doing to this point, and good luck with everything going forward.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That brings us to the end of episode 88 of Taste Radio Insider. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to our guest, Ashley Rogers. Please subscribe to Taste Radio on the Apple Podcasts app, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. As always, for questions, comments, ideas for future podcasts, please send us an email to ask@tasteradio.com. On behalf of the entire Taste Radio team, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.